On this episode of Decisions That Matter, a public procurement podcast brought to you by Procurated, we sat down with Jillian Dee to discuss her work at FoodCorps as the Director of Supply Chain Engagement. FoodCorps is bringing together local communities to connect kids to healthy food in school. Jillian does a great job of covering everything from high-level policy topics to the on-the-ground supply chain challenges involved in feeding and educating kids in school districts across the country. I really love this discussion because it's a topic that I think is extremely important for us and for the next generation of kids. But I also love it because almost anyone can get something useful from this episode. Whether you are a procurement or a supply chain professional, a food service worker, a teacher or an educator, a school administrator, or a parent with a school-aged child. My last note before we kick this episode off, Jillian was extremely generous in providing us with ample resources that support her information that she shares throughout the episode. So please check out the show notes and read through the articles, view the reports and policy documents that she shared, and sign up for regular alerts from FoodCorps. This is a great episode. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast, where we meet with leaders from across the procurement community to discuss innovative and strategic ideas. Because when it comes to procurement, every decision matters. All right, welcome to the Decisions That Matter podcast. I'm your host, Alex Stonehouse, here with my co-host, Bernadette Lowney. And joining us today, we have Jillian Dee, who is the Director of Supply Chain Engagement at FoodCorps. Thanks for joining us, Jillian.
It's so great to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and introduce us to FoodCorps?
Sure. Okay. So FoodCorps is a nonprofit whose mission is to connect kids to healthy food in school. We are about 10 years old, and we run an AmeriCorps service program in 16 states and DC. So this year we had 220 service members in schools and community-based organizations, and our service members focus on hands-on learning, nutrition education, and in many cases, especially this past year with the pandemic, they actually support school food service departments with meal preparation and food distribution. So they've helped communications to kind of get the word out to families to help students gain access to food during the pandemic. And more, we're actually operating at the intersection of school meals and education as a whole organization. So working toward building a clear case for the education community to see how essential school meals are for student success and long-term achievement. And at the end of the day, it's not really about FoodCorps' vision. It's about the community vision and supporting schools where they're at and helping them kind of get where they need to go. So for my role as the Director of Supply Chain Engagement, I am part of our national impact team. So I support FoodCorps staff and I collaborate with state and national partners on initiatives related to school meal procurement and values-based purchasing.
That's awesome. I know myself personally, I always knew the importance of school meals, especially for families who really depend on it for their kids to get one, two, even three meals a day. But I know the pandemic really brought that to light to me as schools closed, that the kind of emergency state that put a lot of families and a lot of communities in. So really important work. Have you always been in the food industry or are you more supply chain background, more of the passion with the food? What is your background? How did you get to where you are now?
So I have been working in the food space for about a decade. I actually have a degree in fine arts. So I have a degree in painting and I was working in the art world for a good while, working at museums and things like that, and always enjoyed working with my hands. And I think between that and just really always being an outdoorsy person, someone who cared about nature and the environment, and that led me to farming. So I farmed for a couple of years in rural Virginia, where I was growing fruits and veggies and herbs for wholesale production, small scale growing. And that's really where I started to get introduced to the world of food, was just starting a farm. And it was super fun. It was really, really hard. As you might imagine, being a beginning farmer, a new farmer has all kinds of challenges. And I got to interface with a lot of folks at USDA, at our local agencies, working with NRCS and stuff like that. And then it really was my time at the Common Market, which after farming for a couple of years, I moved to Philadelphia. I'm from Pennsylvania and wanted to be closer to my family and found this great opportunity at the Common Market. And so I worked as an outreach associate there for a couple of years initially, trying to sell local sustainably grown foods to hospitals and schools. And that's really where I cut my teeth on what procurement even means. what it is, and started to understand how it works. So at that time, I was there for almost 5 years. So I really grew a lot there. And it was a tremendous opportunity to learn about public procurement and contracts and food service management companies and all this kind of fun, gnarly stuff about the way large volumes of food move through our food system. And then from there, I moved to Food Corps, and I'm working more on a national scale now and trying to support schools to get good, healthy foods as the ways that school communities define healthy and local. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
So on sort of a macro scale, what are some of the bigger issues facing schools right now when it comes to food issues? So is it a matter of it's mostly focused on nutrition and getting the right balance of food, or is it coming down to funding? Is it supply chain? What are the bigger issues that you're looking at on a day-to-day basis?
It is all of those things.
We can go into each one in more detail. So no pressure to answer all of those at once.
School food has changed a lot in the past several years, and I actually think the perception has not really caught up with the reality in some ways with many incredible things that schools are doing nowadays. And in particular, and we talked about this a little before, this past year has shown us how important school meals are to combating food insecurity. So schools were feeding not just their own students, but actually whole communities and families and students from other schools nearby that had shut down during the pandemic. So in normal years, 30 million kids participate in the National School Lunch Program. So that is a lot of meals. And it represents just so much opportunity for the communities to actually connect more with their food producing communities nearby. But it's not really happening in a well-supported or systematic way yet. So when you think about farm to school, for example, it really has enjoyed this growing appeal over the past 10, 15 years. And school meals has come all this way with the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act and like all of the progressive school nutrition directors. But we have such a long way to go in terms of breaking down barriers and creating different incentives on both the supply and the demand sides of the equation. One important thing that I wanted to mention is that most people don't know that school food service operates on a completely separate budget than the rest of the district. It really operates like a business. So this actually creates a disconnect between the priorities of the education system and that of the school meal operators. And so on the flip side of that, like we've seen during the pandemic, that when superintendents and principals kind of really value their child nutrition departments, that the services and the care that they provide, that partnership can really go a long way for just being more effective in getting meals to students and meeting the needs of like their well-being and their nutritional needs to just have those shared goals.
Can you explain that a little bit more in depth in terms of that the school food system is set up more like a business in terms of the budget? So what exactly does that mean, and what are the implications compared to how maybe other how procurement would affect other parts of the school district?
So what it basically means is that participation is really, really important to a school food service operation. So if families who could actually afford the school meals paid for them, that would provide more money into the overall operation so that the directors could do some of the work that they want to do or some of the things that the community is asking them to do, like putting salad bars in every school and having a little bit extra money in the budget to purchase a better quality product. And this is actually why so many people are advocating for universal school meals right now, because it would just do so many good things for both the school meal providers and for kids. It relieves the burden of paperwork, where right now schools basically have to track, you know, students that are getting the free meal versus the reduced price meal. They're operating on different tiers. So if we had universal meals, it would save a lot of time and not having to do the extra paperwork. And for the kids, it actually removes the stigma that impacts students who can't afford the meals. So that's another thing that universal meals would do. In a sense, it would just provide more equity in the overall system by shoring up this already existing infrastructure to support kids who are food insecure. And we know that since the pandemic, that's just a lot more kids.
Do you think there's, in terms of, you know, we're marketers here, Alex and I, in terms of just like the parents and the families and the communities, do you think there might be like a knowledge gap there in understanding that? Because I could imagine a lot of parents might think, you know, I am fully capable of preparing, you know, a healthy lunch for my kid. I want to make sure the schools can focus on the kids who really need it. And, you know, I don't need to participate. But if they understood that, you know, that kind of dynamic there, that maybe they would be more inclined to participate. So like, do you think kind of that knowledge and that understanding is something that needs to improve?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it goes back to the perception piece that we talked about a little bit. It's like, I think school meals have a certain reputation. There's just a lot of misunderstanding. There was a really great piece in the New York Times last year, or the year before, that I'll try and dig up and send to you all, where someone wrote really beautifully about this exact problem.
that makes it really hard from an administrative standpoint, I'm sure, to say, oh, here's our one policy that we're going to roll out to the whole district when people in different areas are not experiencing the same like day-to-day life, you know?
Yeah. I think that's what's, it does, it is what makes it really hard for schools. I mean, as any large institution or public institution, it's like there's an expectation that comes along with the services that a public institution provides. Mm-hmm. And I think people who are advocates for school meals really want to see more supports for both the operators and the schools themselves. I mean, we were talking about budgets a little bit before, and that's something that a lot of people are trying to push for now, is how do we get more money into the school meal operations, either through Universal or through some other mechanism to actually support the changes of the types of meals that people want to see more. But because it's so political and it's like about who deserves this food and why should we pay for people who can't afford it, right? Like these things aren't fundamentally about school meals. They're about like our values as a society.
Yeah, for sure. Could you talk a little bit about the actual supply and demand issue that comes with the supply chain? Because I imagine if you think of like a smaller school district that maybe has two elementary schools, a middle school and a high school, it doesn't seem that complicated to partner with a couple farms, figure this all out. And then you think, okay, how does DCPS with 125 schools handle this? Or how does the New York public school system do it, where they don't even name their schools anymore. They just go public school 174, public school 190, like. So I imagine that to do something in a bigger, or even in Philly, I'm sure is a different animal compared to smaller places. How do you guys handle that supply and demand issue? Is it a matter of finding more farms or bigger farms, or how does that work out?
Oh, it's a very complex problem, but that's part of what makes my job fun. I guess one thing I want to mention really quickly first that I forgot to say at the top was I want to note that I am not an operator in the school food system. Like Food Corps does not buy food. We don't sell food. We don't grow it. We are kind of just one player in this vast system. And so I always have to make that clear, that as a nonprofit and we're operating more as like an advocacy organization in a lot of ways to try and create the changes we want to see. It's important to make that distinction because
context. You have that's a different, you're not trying to sell stuff from your personal farm or something like that.
Right. It's not my personal farm.
You're talking to a lot of the players.
Right.
So you hear from the schools, hear from the governments and the school districts, and then you're also from the policy and legislation side of things. You kind of like get to see all sides.
Exactly. We certainly have priorities that we're pushing for that we can talk about more a little bit later from the policy side of things, but because we don't represent any organizations who are trying to sell to schools, that puts us in a somewhat unique position to advocate for these things. And I think that that's what makes the role of a nonprofit really important, as you actually need someone who can go between these various silos and the way that they operate and their differing priorities, both on the supply and demand side, and sometimes even on just the supply side or just the demand side. There are silos, right? So there's a lot of conversation right now about how we leverage this massive purchasing power that schools have. It's like $18 billion of money. But when it comes to actually translating the purchasing power into actual procurement, the purchasing that supports the values that schools are really trying to go for in a lot of ways, that's kind of where the rubber hits the road, whether the values are, you know, more equity in the food supply or the value of just local alone and defining what it is, or what does healthy even mean to us, right? These are pretty complex questions that schools have to grapple with when they think about what are the kinds of foods that they want to be purchasing, and then how do we go about purchasing those foods, finding the supply. So part of this is just like the policies and the regulations that dictate the incentives and processes for federal meal programs. And part of it is that mismatch of supply and demand. So procurement can be really complex. And I actually find that there's a lot of really well-meaning advocates who don't understand how procurement works at a school, or that the food service director just has like a million things on their plate. So I always try and push for like, how are we actually working together better to bring our various like strengths and knowledge bases to the table so that we can work to transfer some of those purchasing dollars toward local purchases or how are we defining what that means? I was actually just on a call earlier this morning where we were trying to make the distinction between purchasing from a local vendor versus purchasing from a local producer, right? Like there's even a distinction there because, you know, Coca-Cola is local to Atlanta, Georgia, right? So like what are we actually going for when we're trying to purchase local? But you had asked before about kind of the scale question and that mismatch. So, right, any of the largest districts in the country, Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles, they're going to have really different supply challenges than the rural and the smaller and tribal schools. But we have to remember that most of the, I think it's like 13,000 school districts in this country, most of them are actually small or mid-sized. So it's actually a lot easier for a small farm or a local farmer to sell directly to that school district that has, like, you know, 500 or 1,000 kids, where the food service director runs the whole show, and they can develop a direct relationship because there's not a lot of bureaucracy or people in between. It's just the food service director and the farmer. So there's a lot of rural schools who are already doing this, actually. And I feel like not a lot of people realize that either. There's a lot of local going on in rural because that is like the foundation of the community.
I could see places having a decades long relationship with the farmer who are like, hey, enrollment went up 100 students, we're going to need a couple more rows of corn next year.
Totally.
Being able to communicate on that level for some of those smaller communities.
And that's, I feel like that's what we saw with the pandemic too, right? It's like the national supply chains were completely disrupted in all these ways. And the smaller ones were as well, the smaller and regional supply chains, but the farmers that were smaller and a little bit more nimble in their operations were able to pivot, actually. So when they lost their restaurant sales, they were able to knock on the door of the school down the street and say, hey, do you want some of this? I have it. And so there were a lot of new relationships that were formed between schools and smaller farmers since the pandemic that I've personally heard a lot of stories like that. So we're hopeful that some of those connections will be able to be maintained whenever things return to whatever normal is going to be when the pandemic's over.
That's a really great look at what some of the small and mid-sized school districts are looking at, a lot of really local farms and really working that local community. Can you kind of also set the scene a little bit of what more urban school districts and those larger school districts, what their supply and demand supply chains look like and what some of those challenges are?
Yeah. So I want to mention the work of the Urban School Food Alliance here, because I think they're doing some pretty interesting things, and they're really starting to get cooking in the past year. They have hired up a few more staff. So they actually have a director of procurement who works there now. And it's basically a nonprofit that is an alliance of, I think they're up to 14 districts now, of the largest districts in the country. So New York, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Chicago, Miami-Dade, I think is one of them. And they are really trying to collectively leverage their purchasing power to do all kinds of things for their supply chain. There was a really interesting comment that the director of New York City Schools has been making, actually, where he poses this question of like, well, we, like, the schools and the school districts of that size especially are just kind of a small part of the larger national supply chains. And he is really interested in how schools can tap into the market that actually serves consumer products and like the more of the retail space, because schools, there are just different SKUs and different nutritional requirements that products that go into schools have to have a child nutrition label on them, so that when schools are doing menu planning, it makes sure that it's meeting the USDA guidelines for the standards that are set that all schools have to follow. And so when we think about like, what are the different foods and food products, I feel like we've been talking a lot about whole foods, minimally processed foods, when you're thinking about foods that are coming maybe from farmers. And it's a very different thing to try and buy local food when you're serving a million kids a day. So how do you get to that scale? And part of that comes through working with food hubs or with cooperatives, but the transparency in the supply chain is a really big issue as well for making sure that the food at that, or the food at any scale really actually is like where it's coming from is made clear and apparent, and it's true to the source.
It's a complex dynamic, because on the one hand, you'd say, things like the food label seems like it's like over legislating and you're not getting healthy food because you have to get all this prepackaged food. And then the flip side, you could argue, no, it's actually to protect people, so we know what they're getting. We're proving that it's at least somewhat nutritious and that it's vitamin enriched and it's some level of appropriate because it has the food label.
So does that kind of give more leverage to some of these maybe larger companies and larger food production companies, because maybe have they gone through more of the legislation and gotten like all the labels and things like that? So is that a barrier to entry to maybe some of these smaller players that can't produce at that scale?
Definitely. That's one of the many barriers, right? For scale being one, but also what are the requirements for getting a CN label? Or, you know, how does a food producer that's smaller or trying to get into the school market even know that they need a CN label, right? So there are all kinds of issues like that for sure. The USDA guidelines that are set are the baseline for what defines healthy across the board for schools. And more schools are trying to go above and beyond that, but there isn't a lot of support or guidance about what to do beyond that.
So that allows, I would guess, a lot of interpretation after the fact. Right. In a perfect world, for a lot of creativity and for innovation, but also for some like potentially maybe like bottlenecking and just like a lot of challenges.
Yeah. And people get really caught up on the definitions, you know, the difference between how are we defining what healthy is and how are we verifying that? Because when we think about verifying certified organic or something like that, right, that's a certification. So that's really the way the system is built up right now, is through certifications. But like, there's lots of great food out there being produced in the world that isn't certified in any formal way. And there are costs that are associated with certifying. So it's kind of an interesting and very gray area in some ways, not the certifications. The certifications are not a gray area and the standards are not a gray area, but everything that exists outside of that, that's like trying to fit into a system that is set up where there are standards and certifications, that's where there's just more room for interpretation and relies more on kind of the human element of people having conversations and working it out with what they mean when they use certain words to describe foods.
So I think that's a really great segue into what we can talk about next, is kind of in that creativity, innovation, how can we work together to make this the best possible food system for schools? Can you tell us a little bit more about FoodCorps' vision and how you like to work with school districts to improve this, improve their food?
Yeah. So I wanted to mention a couple of things. In particular, I wanted to talk a little bit about FoodCorps' policy vision, and I want to invite folks to check it out. So we are working in partnership with a lot of other states and national coalitions to advocate for universal meals and expanding farm-to-school programming. We're gonna reintroducing the food educator bill this year that we had worked on with Senator Booker in New Jersey. We're advocating for more money in school meal programs and creating more incentives for values-based purchasing and local food purchasing. We'd also love to see more dedicated support for growers of color to enter and compete in the school food market. There's a million things. Funding infrastructure for school meal operations, that's something we haven't talked about yet. But a lot of schools need just like basic kitchen equipment, like cutting boards and knives and cold storage. So these are just like the practical things that really need to be done. So these are the types of policies that we're going to be advocating for, because we can't expect schools, you know, without the right professional development opportunity for their food service staff to be preparing speed scratch meals from whole ingredients in their schools. So kind of all of the different wraparound supports that would be necessary to support a school meal operation. I also wanted to mention that in the coming year, we're actually going to be launching a school nutrition cohort. I don't know if that's the proper name for it yet, but in addition to placing service members in schools to do nutrition education, we're going to have service members placed at the district level supporting the goals of the child nutrition departments and adding a little bit of extra capacity to help get projects underway that they might have in mind.
Is most of your work on the logistical supply chain policy level, or do you also go a little bit deeper and talk about the specifics of nutrition, micronutrients, food combinations?
So lately, I've been convening this group of school nutrition directors to revise an ingredient guide with the help of Center for Science and the Public Interest. There's a food scientist we've been working with there. So this is a tool that was originally created by a group of directors working with this nonprofit called School Food Focus. And School Food Focus merged with FoodCorps back in 2018. And I've basically picked this project up, but it's really being led by the directors, I'll say. I'm just helping to facilitate. So this is a project that's less about the food system as a whole, and it's really more specific to ingredients that are commonly found in school food products, which is a different type of equity issue, I'll say. So this is a science-based guide specifically for school food products, and it stipulates which ingredients to look out for and things like that. And it really empowers schools to have a conversation with their vendors and their school communities and to actually use their procurement processes to make some of these changes based on research from CSPI. So if you look at the majority of food that schools are purchasing, there's a lot of different things happening out there. And the idea is to try and start to align the demand around certain types of food products that are produced with these ingredients specifically to make some shifts in the larger supply chains. And the big idea is that schools really actually hold the power to do that if they are sending the same message through their procurement processes.
To have somebody to be like, hey, here's the standard, here's what we'd recommend, and then give that as a tool for people in that purchasing process, I think is really powerful. The education piece of what you guys are doing is also really interesting to me, and just giving the people at multiple levels of sort of those important spots on the chain the right information at the right time, because just thinking about the schools local to me and what I know that they're doing. So there's limitations, obviously, to the number of lunchroom staff that they have or the number of people preparing in the kitchen and things like that. But one thing that they did was to take a little bit of burden off of those folks was they did grow boxes out on the playground for each grade or each classroom. And then the idea was like, we'll do a quick 30-minute thing to teach the teachers. And then they all learn how to plant a tomato and plant green peppers and plant some basil and this and that. And a lot of the things they chose were more sensory food. So like a strawberry or a tomato, you can like see it and feel it. But then something like basil, you can rub your fingers on it and smell it. And then the kids are out there interacting with the food, and it's one step disconnected from actually like, what are you eating in the lunchroom? But it's giving them this relationship with food that they might not get anywhere except for that moment on the playground. So
absolutely,
the whole picture of what you all are doing is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have the students engaged in the food. That's a really critical part of the equation. I know we've spent most of this conversation kind of talking about school meals and what happens on the back end of the cafeteria, but school food service directors are actually really motivated by what they consider the customer experience of the student. And that's a lot. I mean, a lot of the trends that I've seen, like food service directors are out there trying to figure out how do they bring those trends into their food service environment in their cafeteria? And how are we lifting up the student voice? So that is part of what a lot of schools are doing on their own. And that's also part of what our service corps does, is they'll make those connections between the like taste testing that's happening in the cafeteria and having the students be able to try their hand actually growing something themselves and doing like the science lessons behind it. And it's really, I mean, the kids just light up. They love it. They absolutely love it. And when they can do it themselves, kind of opens their eyes to what food can do and what food can be in ways that they haven't seen before. It's pretty awesome. And consumption, like it actually impacts consumption.
Yeah, absolutely.
that's what I was going to ask. Is there any like data points or anything that proves that improves engagement in the food that they're eating, or they see an uptick on like healthier foods being chosen, or you know, whatever that is?
Yes, I'm totally going to botch this, but there's a really great study that we did just a couple of years ago that I'll also forward to you all.
And we'll link to it in the show notes for
you. Okay, great. Yeah. So it was a study done with a school in New York. The study proved out there was a correlation between the hands-on lessons and kind of taste testing and giving the kids those experiential learning opportunities and being able to actually taste it for themselves, that it did have an impact on students being willing to try things and increasing their consumptions of fruit and vegetables.
I know for kids who have like food aversions or they tend to be picky eaters, the rule of thumb is essentially, you can't say you don't like a food until you've tried it 10 times or represented it 10 times.
And adults can be that way too, frankly.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important to reach people when they're young too, right? Because they're kids and they're developing their lifelong eating habits when they're little. So the more that a school and a school food service environment can do to support that learning, that it isn't just about the nutrients, right? It's also about the experience of the meal and how they develop a relationship with food, which is more of a social emotional kind of aspect.
So we've talked a lot about the back end, the procurement, the supply and demand, and the front end, customer experience, nutrition programs, and education. If you could kind of wrap up any small or big changes and tips that government and education workers can take home with them to make improvements in their own school food programs, you know, what would you share with them?
Thanks for this question. I have kind of two different types of answers. One is a little bit of a soapbox that I'll get on, and the other is like maybe a little bit more practical advice that you might be searching for. So to start off with, I think it's good to not make any assumptions and really go and meet your school nutrition professionals and learn what they're working on and kind of what they're up against. Find out what's already happening in your community. And even at the state level, there's just so much great work at state agencies and with farm to school networks that you really don't need to kind of like forge your own path if this is something that's interesting and exciting to you. There's a lot you can do to join forces with people who are already working on this stuff. I also think it's really important to organize within your community to get a diversity of voices and perspectives at the table, in addition to the people that you usually talk to. So food service representatives, school wellness folks, administrators, teachers, parents, students, farmers, state agencies, community organizations, right? Each of these different people have a stake in school meals and kind of bringing about changes that they want to see together. So I feel like that's the way to go, is to try and break down the silos and actually talk to one another. It seems so straightforward, but I feel like it's just worth saying. And more on the practical side of things, in terms of changes and things that people should be thinking about, I feel like we touched on this before. You can make all these changes to the procurement and the food itself, but at the end of the day, you know, how much time do kids actually have to eat is a really great question, right? Some schools only have 20 minutes to get lots and lots of kids through the lunch line and fed. And I don't know if you've ever seen a first grader try to eat a whole apple while they're chatting with their friends, but it takes a really long time. So these are like the types of policies that actually need to be updated to make the most out of the school meal program that we already have. Another really great suggestion is just join the students in the cafeteria for a meal if you're a parent or if you work at the school, and really kind of get a sense for what the student experience is. I feel like that's another great way to get a sense of what's going on. There's a lot more suggestions that I would recommend folks check out in our Reimagining School Cafeterias report, which I'll send along to you. There's so many great things. I think overall, we're just missing the opportunity to leverage the cafeteria as a classroom and really a place of community building in the school. And I really want to emphasize the point that all of the education staff in particular, principals, teachers, and district staff, they have a huge influence over different aspects of the school meal program, how it's perceived and how it's experienced. So if each of these folks could really see how they're connected to supporting the same ultimate goals as the school meal program, we can all kind of work together more effectively to support students.
I love that you said, don't feel like you have to start from ground zero, because even just throughout this conversation, you've mentioned so many like nonprofits, organizations, associations who are working so hard on these topics that getting the right people in the room, it just, like, you don't have to start from zero, like touch base with the people in your community that have already started doing this work, and then just come together and try to move things forward. Well, thank you so much, yeah. Jillian. I'm really excited for this episode. This is totally different than any content that we've put out, just being like really topic specific and really like diving into something that we haven't gotten to talk about that much. So I'm really excited. I think our audience is really gonna like it.
I hope so. This is super fun.
Thanks for listening to Decisions That Matter. This podcast is brought to you by Procurated, the leading supplier evaluation tool for procurement professionals across the U.S. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you prefer to listen. See you again next time.